Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Brett Carlson. Well, who's Brett Carlson? I guess that was my question. That's the manifestation of this whole podcast. Well, Brett Carlson, most recently, I think, you know, for me anyways, I was introduced to Brett Carlson as a person, as a professional, when he showed up on Tour Level Gold. For those of you that don't know, you just got to go look up Tour Level Gold on YouTube. And what you'll find is this series that follows along. You know, last year it was John Hoyer, Dewey Gelm, Max Wilson, and Owen Wilcox, a rookie. And it's just a series that shows kind of the behind the scenes and some of the storylines of walleye fishing that you really don't get anywhere else, and very educational and just entertaining. And very, very fun. But all the anglers there are either already well-known or becoming well-known. But this Brett Carlson, he comes on, and he's not one of the anglers competing in tournament fishing, but he's almost like the narrator of these storylines and how he knows all these storylines. And he come to find out he's really close with all of these anglers, and his storytelling is probably the most entertaining part of Tour Level Gold for me as I watch it. And I really, really do enjoy it, but I still just, it was gnawing at me all last year, all last season, in these first few episodes that came out in 2024. Like, here's Brett Carlson. Gosh, he's just got all the best stories, and he knows how to tell them in his perspective, not just the facts, not just the stories and statistics and things that he can reference so well from historical walleye fishing. When he adds his two cents to what's going on, it's so spot on. And it really just draws you in. It adds so much texture to these stories. So yeah, I got so curious, and I was really hoping that I could reach out to Brett and that he'd be cool to do a podcast to talk about himself. And wouldn't you know it, he's one of the coolest guys. He's a passionate angler. He's got a great origin story. We learn all about him. He's obviously very humble. It's hard to get a lot of this stuff out of him, but I'm pretty sure, I guess I've never fished with him, but I'm pretty sure he's also a phenomenal angler. That's not what his profession is whatsoever. He covers angling. It's more journalistic what he's done in his career. But, man, just a super cool guy, a super passionate angler, and just passionate about the industry and telling great stories. I've just, in a short amount of time, become a big fan, and this is really, really fun for me to get to know somebody brand new in the industry and in a new sort of corner of the industry. And yeah, you just can't help but take a lot away from this story. So together we're going to get to know, in this interview, we're going to get to know Brett Carlson. So without further ado, let's get into it. The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom. That includes 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. All right, man. Brett Carlson, dude. I really appreciate the time, and I can say that I'm a big fan, but only recently, because Tour Level Gold is been a really, really cool thing. Anybody that's watched it knows it. I promoted it on this show a whole bunch of times. I talked to all the guys, and I think it's really cool. But one interesting thing is you in all of this. You're definitely a big part of that production, and I realized right away. And it's been gnawing on me, watching the success of this thing. It's been gnawing on me that I don't know who this Brett Carlson guy is. I mean, he's got this longtime career. He's got all these great stories. He knows all these guys really well. How can that be? Like, what is it? What is this Brett Carlson story? So I want to make a story out of it, man. I appreciate you coming on for this. But where does this story begin for you, man? Where are you from? What's your fishing story? Go ahead.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, Taylor, and I'll start by saying the fact that you don't know me is sort of intentional. Like, I've been working in this crazy outdoor industry for 20 years, maybe actually a little bit over 20 years now that I think about it. I originally started in the fishing industry. I was interning at the end of my college career. I attended the University of Minnesota, grew up in the southwest suburbs. I still live west of the Twin Cities area. So I know a lot of guys that fish like Lake Minnetonka and Lake Waconia. Basically, you can find me on the water anywhere in that general area, but I don't actually fish those big lakes because they get so much crazy boat pressure. But long story short, I had a boss that said, hey, there's a job opening at a place called FLW Outdoors. Have you ever heard of that? And I was like, well, yeah, I've heard of that, but I didn't even know they had an office in Minneapolis at that time. So long story short, I applied for that. I'm a print journalism major by trade. So all this narration and voiceover stuff that I've been doing in the last handful of years in my career, that's not really my area of expertise. I consider myself a writer and a storyteller and an editor. So that's kind of how I landed. And my first weeks at FLW, our owner at the time, the late Irwin Jacobs, he had just sold Lund and Crestliner because the RCL championship. So back then the FLW Walleye Tour was called the RCL. So, but Irwin sold Crestliner and Lund to Brunswick. So then Irwin just owned Ranger. Then it became the FLW Walleye Tour. So I've basically worked there for over 10 years, and then FLW basically became insolvent, and as we know, it was acquired by Major League Fishing, and then the National Walleye Tour kind of became its own one-off. So I've continued working in the outdoor space ever since.
We have to get this story, though, of like where you're from, man. Like, were you, you know, fishing? I mean, it didn't just fall out of the sky for you. It couldn't have. Tell me, like, where does that start for you? Were you like everybody else? You're 5 years old, 6 years old, following your older brother down to the river to catch bullheads? I mean, I feel like I want to get that part of the story.
Sure. I can back you up even further. I'm the youngest of three boys in the family. And my oldest brother was somewhat into fishing. And the middle brother couldn't care less about fishing whatsoever. We always joke that he's an avid indoorsman. And then I was the guy that fished every moment I could with dad. So my father, even to this day, right now, he's up in the Boundary Waters. My dad is 77 years old, and he's paddling, you know, God knows how many miles up in the Boundary Waters right now, chasing walleyes himself. So you can see that, like, he has the passion for walleyes. And just fishing in general, not just walleyes. He's crappie fisherman, bass fisherman too. He instilled that in me, and we would go fishing pretty much every chance we could. And he is like the ultimate slipcork bobber fisherman. He is like the happiest he can be when he sees his walleye bite where they kind of stun it and like the bobber kind of vibrates for a second and then slowly dips down. Like, that's my father's happy place. So I've been trying to get my dad to embrace a lot of the new techniques of walleye fishing, whether it's kind of reaction bites and plastics, and yes, he'll catch fish, but then like his brain completely goes right back to, no, I'm a live bait leech fisherman. So I have to go back to that. So we still fish a ton together, and that's where it all came from for me. We have a family cabin up in the Hayward, Wisconsin area. So when I'm not fishing around here in Minnesota, we'll be up in the northwest Wisconsin area, catching a lot of fish up there as well.
When did fishing really take a turn for you? It had to have, I mean, because, you know, with your career where, you know, you think back in those incremental experiences, this would be true in any profession, any passion that anybody ever has. It's like, you get a passion for it. It probably has something to do with quality time with your father, and it's interesting, gets you out in nature, you know, you just, you know, something that just really vibes with you. But then, you know, when or what are some of the, you know, memories that you have where fishing kind of leveled up for you, or just your perspective on fishing where you realized, oh, there's levels to this, like, and it grew your passion. Does that make any sense? Like, well, what kind of memories do you have along those lines?
Yeah, it does. And I kind of feel like it's that first time that you're on what I call a bite window. And when I say a bite window, maybe you're not catching them every cast, but when you've clearly figured something out and you're like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to catch one this next drift or this next cast. And for me, that was the Boundary Waters. When you're on such a good walleye bite, I can remember I was about my son's age now, about 10 years old. And we literally caught a walleye every single cast for about 4 or 5 hours, to the point where we were like, well, we've had enough. Like, what else do we do? We literally got sick of catching them. But like that ability to be like, I'm dialed in. Like, I know I have completely figured this out only leads me to want to figure out other similar type bites. And sometimes even once you've had that first experience and then you go the next couple times and you strike out, that kind of fuels the fire for me as a fisherman to be like, well, why didn't we figure them out this time? Was it, oh, the current was too fast, so they couldn't be in that same sweet spot or whatever it is. So that the first time you figure that puzzle out triggers the passion. And then from there, it's the putting the pieces of the puzzle together every single time. And I feel like, you know, you're a fisherman once you have that desire. Cause I've been with some of my friends where I've put them on a similar type bite and they were like, no, that was kind of cool. And I'm like, that was kind of cool. No, that was unbelievable. And if you just think that was kind of cool, then you're not kind of part of our crazy cult where you can't get enough fishing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You just, you know, it's like tasting sugar for the first time. Tasting confidence on a walleye bite is like tasting sugar for the first time. Yeah. It's like when a fish catch goes from pure luck, which is all great. That all ties back to the origin story of, you know, it's, you know, being in a smaller, you know, humble boat with your hardworking, you know, father that, you know, has time on a few weekends a year. Maybe you take those trips and it's like every fish catch, you take a picture of every 12 incher you catch because they're all so quality. It's also, it feels so lucky. But when confidence comes into your life the first time, mm-hmm. when you have that thing figured out, isn't it? It's just like, takes you to the stratosphere of like, you just don't want to settle for anything less after that, for sure. But I mean, but now, and you kind of introduced us to like how you got into, you know, how, you know, the industry sort of impacted your career and those types of things. Tying those two together, your past, and then blending into the industry, mm-hmm. what have been some of the most impactful things on a personal level, fishing level? Mm-hmm. I like talking fishing. Like on a personal fishing level, when you got into the industry, how did that take your fishing game? I mean, you got to be learning stuff. You have access to the best anglers. You're observing these things. You're hearing things for the first time. Like that has to, still to this day, it's probably a big part of it. What are some memories you would have there?
Well, I was lucky enough. One of my first events ever when I joined the FLW group, I went down to Lake Okeechobee. And just to kind of be around so much of the history of the sport, like to meet Roland Martin and Scott Martin, and just to be around those people and then to watch them, whether it was skip cover or punch those milfoil mats they have down in Okeechobee, that was like an eye-opener for me to be like, holy cow, these guys are good. Like, yeah, it was kind of like a realization that, I'm not as good of a fisherman as I thought I was. And then it was this appreciation for talent. It was like, these guys are passionate like me, but man, do they have skills. Like, they rarely miss a cast and they know exactly what they're looking for. And it that was an eye-opening experience in the bass side for me. And then it was similar in terms of walleye fishing. I remember kind of being like starstruck the first time you're in the bump lines and you see, holy cow, there's Ted Takasaki. Wow, that's really cool. It was great to meet Ted Takasaki. But I would honestly say like the first pro fisherman that I had like a really great relationship was actually Clark Wendland on the bass side. And I know a couple years ago, Clark won Angler of the Year for Bassmaster. So he's a guy that's been around this sport forever. But he was just the consummate professional and that he was super nice to everybody. Like whether it was, you know, like the media side or the sponsorship side, but man, was he a ruthless competitor. So he had this like balance where I was like, wow, this guy is a true professional. And then the where I'm at now with that is that's where John Hoyer is. Like John is, everybody's like so impressed with John, but I'm also equally impressed with John, like as a person. And sometimes I think the fans look at John now as John's kind of almost comes off as a little bit cocky in a lot of these episodes because he's doing so well, but John's also a really good person too.
I'm curious, sort of some evolution. That's a pretty good career. You don't seem like that old a guy. You got a lot of great years left. You're in your prime, but you have seen the, you know, looking back to the beginning of your career, technology was different. The industry was different. You talk about being a writer and, you know, a print writer, but looking at all the different media avenues and platforms and social media and the fan bases and just what would be in your time, in your career, you know, I guess I kind of want to get into that part of the story of like your perspective and just some, you know, just interesting points that you go to bed thinking about, like in your career, like as far as like the media and the fans and just the industry as a whole, man. What are some things that pop into your mind there?
Well, I will say that it feels weird to not be like the young guy on tour, because I was lucky enough to cover the FLW Walleye Tour and the FLW Bass Tour when I was in my young 20s. And like at that point, you don't really know what you don't know, but it was kind of fun to travel, see the world and learn. But I look back on it now and I remember covering Jason Shakura. Jason Shakura won a big tournament on pool four. I think, we launched at a pool four that year down in Red Wing. And that was like Jason's defining moment, where Jason's been an awesome fisherman, but at that point he hadn't won a tournament. And I can remember that like it was yesterday. We like had the weigh-in at Colville Park and in Red Wing. And I can remember like the relief when they finally called the weight and Jason won. And he was just like, oh, well, the last couple years, now Jason Shakurit's son, Jay, is winning Bassmaster tournaments. And I'm like, I can remember seeing Jay on stage when Jason won. And Jake was like, I don't know, maybe he was, you know, kindergarten type age, like 6-7 years old, and now like Jay himself is a fully grown adult winning tournaments on the St. Lawrence River. And
yeah,
so to me that's like and I joke around Jason, I'm like, how is that possible? Like, wait, that means we're not young anymore, Jay. So yeah. But in terms of like media coverage and how the sport has changed, I can vividly remember being on Table Rock Lake for a bass tournament. It was an FLW tournament. And I was writing what we used to call a morning story. So kind of like laying out the morning conditions, you know, this is what we're looking at for water temperature. Here's what the day's condition looks like for wind and that sort of thing. And at the time we were just experimenting with something called on the water coverage. And I was lucky enough to travel with Rob Newell for many years on the bass side of things. And Rob and I would kind of tag team the coverage. So Rob was on the water, basically following Brent Ayler. And as I'm like ready to post this, to be honest, in hindsight, kind of a boring morning story, Rob is literally reporting and taking pictures. I think he was using, I can't remember if FLW had our own platform or if he was using Twitter back then, where he was updating people real time. And Brent had just gotten onto this honey hole where he was catching them almost, this little pre-spawn honey hole where he was catching them almost every cast. And I thought to myself, this preview story that I'm doing right now is completely pointless. This whole on the water coverage, this live coverage, this is completely the future. Well, I just kind of sat back in my chair and thought to myself, that's where we're heading with fishing. And then from there, we've seen, you know, now we're putting cameras in boats, and some guys would have their own cameras, or sometimes the tournament organizations would put cameras on their boats. And then everybody got to see how fast the learning curve would accelerate, because you're there with the guys cast for cast, blow for blow. And in my mind, that's been the biggest change in fishing, where you're like, okay, we're no longer waiting for coverage to happen later. It's now coming at us real time. And even though I was never a part of that, the head-to-head organization, I thought their idea and their business model of going head-to-head and having nonstop live on the water coverage that's the direction I think that it needs to go for walleye fishing. And we're not there yet in the walleye side of things, but that's the difference right now between bass and walleye, is they have that much better coverage.
Yeah, that head-to-head deal, that was a really cool deal. Like there, that like just the obvious elements to that as a fan, as a viewer, being able to bump in on those live feeds, and yeah,
And
just.
I don't know exactly where that went wrong. I mean, they had some of the bigger names in the sport. They didn't have all, I mean, maybe with the right guys and the right backing financially in terms of sponsorship, that still is viable. But I think there is a lot of learning to be done from that live coverage. Because that's like, to put myself, when I would follow the pros and take photography, like as a fan myself, like you can't help but learn as you're absorbing what they're doing and kind of processing it yourself, and why are they making these decisions? Well, every fan can do that with live coverage.
The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a four-bedroom, three-bathroom that includes two masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps eight. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Giving ourselves a little bit of time here to kind of talk about it. The first time that I saw you or just knew of your career whatsoever, which sort of, it more so just speaks to me being young and as a young fan in the industry. I'm not a young person, but I've only been involved in the industry and a fan of tournament fishing, you know, for the last probably 8, 9, 10 years, but the last 5 years way more seriously. And then a couple of years ago, we started this podcast and I interview these guys and have access to these guys. And so I just consider myself like a number one fan. And Tour Level Gold comes out last year. And like I said, like when we started this, it was like, oh, I know those guys. I know all those anglers. And I think it makes total sense what they got going on. And then I was like, who's this Brett Carlson guy that keeps coming on? He's got all the best stories. He's got the best insider information. It's like it's a humongous element to the information, the learning, the context, like the texture of Tour Level Gold. You have like a massive impact. Like, I don't mind saying that. Like, you have a massive impact on how much I enjoy watching it. But I have like no clue who you are, how do you get to, you know, be on Tour Level Gold? How do they find you out of nowhere, right? Like, because that's where, like, my brain doesn't have the ability to know those things. Like, I just have to ask, like, what's the Tour Level Gold story for you? How far back do you go with these guys? And how did that first email or phone call, or were you part of the idea process? What is the story with you and this Tour Level Gold?
Well, sadly, I do go back for pretty far with a lot of these guys. I'll say that, which again, I'm aging myself, but that's okay. The alternative is to being 6 feet under doesn't sound so good. So I guess I'll wear my age with some honor. But basically, I've had a strong relationship with John for many, many years. So I've written a lot of stories, and John is one of those guys where I hate the cliche game changer. But he has basically he's reinvigorated walleye fishing. He's all the normal conventions about walleye fishing John has challenged, and time again, he's sort of recreated how we think about walleyes. And this is not a forward-facing sonar thing. This is well beyond forward-facing sonar. John just approaches walleye fishing from a musky point of view, if that makes sense. So I remember covering, we had a tournament on Sault Ste. Marie, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. John was ripping cabbage. He was ripping swim baits through some cabbage, something that's never been done in Sault Ste. Marie before, and this is nothing to do with forward-facing sonar again, but basically like a musky tactic where he's almost letting these swim baits drop down through the cabbage and then ripping them up through. And he blew the field away. And everybody was like, you can do well at Sault Ste. Marie without trolling. Like that sort of philosophy, when I was covering John as a writer and writing his stories, I would be fascinated by it. So we would have like our normal interview and I'd do all my written work, but then we'd also just have these conversations about fishing in general. And I just love the way how he thought differently. So it was John's baby. This whole two-level gold is essentially John's idea of bringing the backstory and the highs and lows of tournament fishing to the walleye world. And John asked me, do you want to be a part of this? We want somebody who knows these guys. And I'm like, well, I will admit I do know most of the guys. Would you be willing to do this? And I said, sure, but I'm not exactly, I don't consider myself to be like an on-camera personality kind of guy. So that was a little bit out of my comfort zone, but I'm always up for, you know, trying something new and trying something different. And lo and behold, I thought it worked pretty well. Right away when John pitched the idea to me, I said, well, who's in this? Besides you, John, like who would be in the show? And then he laid out, well, it'd be Max Wilson. I said, okay, yeah. Max Wilson's an interesting guy. Love him or hate him. I know there's a lot of people on both sides. Love him or hate him, Max Wilson is an interesting dude. And then he mentioned Dewey, and I was like, okay, yeah, Dewey's a stick. I would love to, you know, follow Dewey for a whole season. And then he mentioned Owen Wilcox, and my response was, who's Owen Wilcox? And at the time, Owen was a rookie, so not many people, if you're not from Montana, not many people did know who Owen Wilcox was. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, I liked that because we got the perspective of what is this like for a rookie? Like, yeah, Max and Dewey and John are awesome, but there's a lot of guys on tour who are new, and seeing what it's like for a noob to go through a full season, that's a whole new perspective that I think adds to the show. So that's kind of how it all started. And the group that produces this is Moore Media, and their Sam Moore heads up that operation. They're up out of Anoka. So being where I'm from, what they asked me to do is drive up to the studio, which is less than an hour from my house. So that all works. And we sit down and they put a camera on me and ask me all kinds of uncomfortable questions. And I sort of, this is a weird comment to there, but I sort of feel like this responsibility to the walleye world to tell the stories of these guys, if that makes sense. Like,
you could have never said no to this. Like just your responsibility to the rest of us that didn't know you yet. No one else was going to tell a better story. Like, I think is a perfect point when you say, or one of the great points that you just said, Owen Wilcox was a rookie, somebody you didn't know personally, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, like he was a rookie. You wouldn't have known him yet. You're not from where he's from, and you hadn't known him yet. But who else is going to translate the story of what a rookie goes through at the top level of tournament walleye fishing? You know, mm-hmm. you've seen it all. There's just very few people out there that have followed high level tournament angling. You've seen rookies. You've seen hundreds of rookies come and go, come and stay. Like you've seen and know what Owen, you know, is sort of going through as an angler. You have that perspective and the writing, like your communication is just point on. And so I really like that where, yeah, like a young person like Owen Wilcox, you know, that could be a risk in a production like this. You know, you bring on this young guy, it's, you know, what's he really going to add to it? He doesn't have a history. He doesn't have there's no storyline yet to talk about. But man, you do a phenomenal job just creating that, like, well, this is what rookies go through. This is what, you know, this is, you know, you just really, help us get in the boat with a young guy like that. So like, what's the future for you? Like you started writing stories and following along. I mean, is this something that you see yourself doing for the next 10 years? Where are we at with that?
That's a great question. And I enjoy following the evolution of fishing. And I enjoy kind of telling the story of how things have changed as generations have come and gone. So, yeah, I do think at some level I want to be in charge of it. I want to be in charge of, well, this is how it used to be, and here's, these were the leaders of our industry at this time. And so I don't know if that means more digital type storytelling, but I think there always is a place for storytelling, whether it is in the print form or in the video form. But I feel like somebody has to tell these stories, and I feel like these guys have a story that's worth telling, if that makes sense. Like, these guys are really good, and what they're doing is not just about forward-facing sonar now. It's how they approach things, how skilled they are, how they make decisions, how they adjust. And so, yeah, I want to be a part of that. And what that looks like, I guess nobody can predict the future, but I do want to be a part of it. I think this is it's a fun industry to be a part of. And I will say that the industry itself kind of goes through like roller coaster cycles of financially things are really well for a while. And then they kind of go, it's a little bit of a ride the wave type industry, but I think it's got staying power. I really do.
Have you considered writing a book or?
Yes, I already, that's a great question, Taylor. And I've talked with some good friends about this who also work in industry. And the title of the book is going to be Egos and Logos, the truth about professional fishing. Egos and logos. There's no shortage of egos out there, and there's also no shortage of logos out there. But I can almost understand, and you will too, Taylor, because you sort of, like, when you get that feedback from a really good day of fishing, it does kind of like feed your ego. So
100%.
I can sort of see why people have those egos, because, you know, if you've done it for many years, fishing gives you that feedback. You know what I mean? Whether it's positive or negative, you're getting feedback all the time.
Yes. No, absolutely. We are reacting to the stimulation around us just like the fish are,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the fish react to stimulation. It's what places them where they are. It's how they find their food. It's how they find, you know, comfortable water to sit in. It's just how they live their daily life. It's just a reaction to stimulation. And man, humans... That's totally true, man. And sometimes, like, yeah, you can argue for or against, you know, talking about the egos, like, man, how do you fish without confidence, right? How do you fish without confidence? Even if those elements that are sort of mandatory for true confidence, you know, for legitimate confidence, sometimes you have to give yourself false confidence just to get through, just to power through an hour, you know, with a good attitude, which is important. Because what's on the other side might be the right decision or whatever. Don't be in a bad mindset. But then, yeah, where do you balance that? Where do you, you know, then you talk to some of these guys and they, you know, they just got everything figured out. And they're just, no, you know, oh.
It's also fun to see when the best anglers lose that confidence. Because they do. And in this next coming episodes of Tour Level Gold, you'll see, I mean, John Dewey, Max... They're three of the best on tour, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you're going to see that on this river, they're not exactly beaming with confidence. And you get to see Owen sort of spin out, and you could see Owen struggle. And when you don't have that, it's telling. And from like a fan perspective, to be like, wow, I know these guys are awesome, but they don't even have it figured out right now. It kind of makes us feel better about ourselves as casual fishermen,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
hey,
yeah.
Even these guys spin out sometimes.
Oh yeah, I had that conversation with Dewey, like on here, like the last time I had him on, like this spring, where talking about Tour Level Gold, where it's tremendous storytelling. There's no question. But seeing these guys in their natural element, you know, even though it's a production, it's not live, like you're not watching it real time, but just the footage of them in the boat doing the act of fishing the way they do it. Is actually super educational. In fact, when I watch it, like, the storytelling is great and all, and the production definitely helps me, like, watch it. I've just really enjoyed watching, you know, guys like Dewey and John and Max, like, make a cast. Or I like watching them, you know, with their trolling motor on 10, truly, you know, like not just, you know, they're not just saying it to say it, like, just watching them actually just going and scanning and not casting until, oh, there's one. And then they crank the boat around and do it. Like, those little clips, like, it's actually super educational. It puts in perspective to me the fishing part of the conversation, where like I'm trying to get better as an angler, and I just can't help but like, now it helps me go out and emulate those guys better, because I know kind of like how, you know, how, where their arm position is when they make casts, like the educational side. And Dewey, like, you know, we were having that conversation where it's fun, it's storytelling, it's stories that are told well and should be told and remembered and encapsulated for a lot, you know, forever. And but man, as a consumer, I actually learned a ton, and just seeing how these guys fish, seeing how Max retrieves that death jig to get mm-hmm. a bite, and how he sets the hook on it. Like there's technical information like that I'm seeing and witnessing on a high level that I don't think I have access to anywhere else. How would you sort of describe that for yourself?
Well, isn't that fascinating too, that you go to a place like Lake Erie, which by most people's best walleye fishery in the U.S., right? They consider themselves the walleye capital of the world. I know Lake of the Woods is too, but we mm-hmm. go to Lake Erie, and all of a sudden, for the first time ever, casting completely takes over. Like, there are so many good walleye fishermen that live out, you know, near Port Clinton or near Cleveland in that area. And you have to wonder, like, why in the heck are those guys not casting? Why does it have to be these four fishermen, these, you know, FFS aces that come over there and basically prove to these locals that, hey, I don't mean to be rude right now, but you guys are doing it wrong. And let me just show you. Oh, and you didn't think we could do it in the wind? Well, here's 4 and 5 footers that John will still catch them in the wind. Like
the footage of like Dewey, it's, it looks like he's levitating like out of the water. His trolling motor is fully cleared, you know, like, and then he just comes crashing down, and he just, his butt never comes off his seat. And then he's just ready for the next. It's like, oh my yeah. gosh.
And there's literally thousands of awesome walleye fishermen in that area.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind that like, hey, you guys have never really done this, never really tried this. Why? Like, it, and again, it goes back to like John's mentality. Well, why can't this work?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Yeah. He does what it's so hard for us. Like those are the things that are like outside of even high level guys' comfort zones. Like for you covering fishing, how would you sort of like describe that to somebody maybe that doesn't, you know, doesn't sort of see it, or, you know, maybe a casual tournament angler, like how often or sort of describe how guys that travel to destinations and fish against the local sticks, mm-hmm. like the guys that have the ability to be objective and break down water without waypoints on, you know, it's like go to Lake Erie like you've never gone. Cause, you know, fast forward that NWT tournament like a couple of weeks, and the guys, I had them on the podcast, the guys that won the national team championship, that was Lake Erie. That wasn't their backyard, but they were totally influenced by, you know, how John fished Lake Erie and casting, and mm-hmm. they went and won that NTC. It's a 300 boat field. Like mm-hmm. anyways, you know, like guys that can go and travel somewhere and beat the local guys, and just how much of an impact that has on certain fisheries and the local fishing community in those places.
And I think John has this mentality of he loves to prove people wrong. Oh, you say this can't be done here? Watch me. It's almost like you tell him he can't do something, he gets even more motivated to do the opposite. But I do yeah. believe that going into some of these fisheries with just the skill set they have and no preconceived notions helps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it really does. And the river wasn't their venue. Like that's not exactly tailor-made for how they like to fish. But for the rest of the year, these next three events that on the NWT schedule, I mean, watch out. Like I am fully expecting, if you gave me 10 guys, I could say these 10 guys are the guys that are going to win these tournaments. And I kind of want to apologize to the other 140 or so that are going to be in the tournaments, because these next three tournaments are tailor-made for guys like Will Poppenfuss and Eric McCoy and Max and all the forward-facing sonar aces. Mm-hmm. That's how the rest of the season shapes up, is like, okay, wide open venues, wide open water, and these guys getting vertical and getting after them.
That storyline of guys that just show up with their skill set, show up with their own confidences, no preconceived notions. I think that I think that that's where so much learning happens. That those were those big aha moments happen, and it influences a tremendous amount of people. You know, those local guys that sign up, maybe they're just trying to test their mettle. You know, maybe or you know, maybe they really do feel like they have a bite going, that they can make an impact, they can win some money, you know, or cash a check or get a trophy or whatever it is. But fishing is so humbling in that way. But then kudos, mm-hmm. you know, the flip side of that coin, yeah, the river, the last NWT, that river with Mike Schumer Jr. I interviewed him, and my big takeaway, or one of the big takeaways there, was his experience was the deal. Like, he was able to make decisions on the fly, and he knew, you know, he knew where he could, you know, a one boat spot, you know what I mean? Like he knew all those little waypoints, and, you know, that's the type of thing that you cripples people in other scenarios, mm-hmm. in other bodies of water. That those are the things that totally keep you closed-minded, and you're not looking in the spots where these guys with forward sonar, these guys that are on a super high level, you know, guys you just named, like, they're gonna find the ones that you're not even, they're in your blind spot. But yeah, so it none of it's dead. You know, I mean, like, Mike Schumer not even having forward sonar in the boat, and putting those pieces together to win, you know, an NWT, unbelievable, super cool story. And is trolling dead? Absolutely not. That it's still, for even, you know, for non-tournament anglers, but you know, it's still in so many cases the best way to pile up a bunch of nice walleyes in your boat, in so many places, right? But it's like, so everything is sort of, you know, peaking in popularity right now, but my gosh, like,
I'm sort of happy that the tour level gold guys didn't do well at the last NDMC event. And that sounds weird, right? But I've had so many people like ask me, or I'm even almost like question me, like, hey, is this whole thing rigged?
Oh my gosh.
It almost seems like you guys are like, is this whole thing rigged, where you guys just, I'm like, no, it's not. Like, no, it is not rigged. I can 100% guarantee you.
Yeah.
And yes, even the best don't always execute, right? I'm a huge Timberwolves fan, and it drove me crazy that Luka Doncic is like just destroyed the Wolves. And there was one game where Luka was not like at peak performance, and that was the one game the Timberwolves won. And that's kind of my analogy here, is I fully believe this was the one tournament where those guys are not thriving and having all kinds of success.
Yeah.
But by the end of the year, I'm pretty sure a lot of those guys' names will be at or near the top of the Angler of the Year standings.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. How do we wrap this up? What's a 3-4 minute closer? Maybe it's a teaser for the upcoming episodes of Tour Level Gold that are going to launch. Maybe, you know, I definitely want, you know, at the end of this, you know, kind of promote yourself just in the way you don't want to for people to find you and all that. But,
yeah.
but even if there's a 2 or 3 minute closer here, like what is it about your story and things that you're enjoying in your career right now with everything that you're doing? Like what are some other things that we got to know about you right now?
Well, I would say kind of a fun thing is you follow the rest of the National Walleye Tour season, as I've partnered up with Brett McComas, who runs Target Walleye.
Cool.
And what we're doing after every event, because it's really hard for the casual fan to get real details about, well, how did Mike Schulmer win the event? And going back the tournament before that, well, John Hoyer won Lake Erie Casting. Well, how? Give me the details. It's hard to get that for the casual fan. So we've put together something called, we're calling it Target Walleye's Full Scoop. And full scoop means that I do a deep dive with each of the top three guys. When I say deep dive, I mean your baits, your colors, your cadence with those baits, why the fish were holding in the spots you were fishing, and rotations of key spots. So we really want to do capture the winning details, and not even the winning details. When we talk about second and third, I mean, these guys clearly had great tournaments too. So I just want you guys, everybody listening today, to look out for Target Walleye's Full Scoop, because that has the details that the casual fishermen like you and I are looking for.
Dude, those Target Walleye emails are fun.
Yeah, and it's kind of ironic that both both of the guys on Tour Level Gold are named Brett McComas and myself, Brett Carlson. And I always joke that he's the younger Brett. He's the better fisherman. He's better looking. So he's the better Brett. I'm the inferior Brett of the two.
Oh, I don't know, man. You guys should do a head to head. I'm telling you, I would host this thing. I would MC a head to head with Brett. We just an obscure no pre-fish, an obscure walleye body of water somewhere in the Midwest. Thus, you know, where you wake up and, you know, kind of like that MLF style where,
yeah,
well, I have a Brett driver bring Brett. You in your boat. Oh, man, I bet you guys would duke it out. That'd be pretty fun. I wouldn't sell yourself short, man.
It might actually be pretty hilarious how similar we fish. He has an absolute love for the Ned rig, for walleyes, and so do I, too. So you'd probably see us both doing the same thing. You'd be like, wait, are these guys clones? What are they doing? They're like, they're both fishing the exact same stuff the exact same way.
Gosh, it just makes sense you guys got together, man. Well, I appreciate the content. I am happy to get to know you more so I can even look back, you know, on the things you've done in your career and consume that content, because, you know, I think for now a lot of there's always young people coming in, right? There's always you know, a young audience that wasn't here for the last 20 years, and you know, those stories going back, I think, you know, all that stuff is very meaningful. It's fun. It gives context to what's going on right now. And so, you know, that's been fun for me, just kind of getting to know you from a distance. But I'm so glad that you agreed to come on and tell more of your story here on this. I just really, I really appreciate it, man. And hopefully being on camera continues to be more and more comfortable for you. I'm a big fan of that whole production, as I've said already, and I think you are the perfect guy for that. So hopefully they don't do anything to run you off, and you guys can maintain that relationship for a while, because I mean, it's, you know, your perspective, your references to those storylines from the past and all that context helps me interpret, and when I'm interpreting these things more accurately of high level anglers, that gives me a way better chance of going out on the water myself and actually building my own skill sets with that information. And so I just think that is just such a huge part of it. So, man. Well, anyways, appreciate everything. If you're willing, if people want to maybe reach out with questions, you know, about whatever's going on in their head, maybe they just want to send you some gratitude for your contribution to what, you know, what we're talking about, your career, whatever it is. If you want to promote yourself at all, go ahead.
I mean, walleye fans, fishing fans in general are more than willing and more than able to reach out to me on Facebook. That's fine. I'm one of the few that I am actually not present, and that's intentional on my part. Everyone's like, what's your Instagram? And I'm like, maybe I'm just too old, but I don't really do the Instagram. So people would be, they're more than able to reach out to me on Facebook, just Brett Carlson. And they'll find a picture of a younger man. I have not updated my profile pic in a while. I love to hear from everybody. I love hearing the feedback. I always joke that I get a lot of feedback that I have a real clear, sort of strong, dominant voice. And I say, I have the voice for radio, and I also have the face for radio as well. So,
you know, I don't know. I looked you up on Facebook, and I didn't. I thought you looked. I don't know. You look the same, man. You're doing fine. You're doing fine, brother.
I've enjoyed it a lot, Taylor. And walleye fans that are listening, when you're watching Tour Level Gold, I just want you guys to know that you're watching three of the absolute best, and Max, Dewey, and John, and just being able to pick their brain and having access to them, that's special, because they are as good as it gets.
All right, brother. We will talk to you, man. Later.
Bye-bye.